to get you more comfortable with a real boyfriend?
I don't know if that's the plan here. So they have teamed up with X-Human Inc.
Okay.
And, yeah, one of the things that they're looking at now is creating AI boyfriends who will engage in sexually explicit conversations with users, particularly those who maybe aren't having a huge amount of luck with other real people. So it begs the question. We know that there is a loneliness crisis.
Yes.
Absolutely. In Canada, and that gay men are definitely not immune to this.
Yes.
As a species, men in our species don't seem to be particularly great at having thorough, fulfilling conversations and emotional connections to other men,
mm-hmm.
gay men included.
Yes.
I feel like I'm as connected to you as a Connect Four. Like, it's just, you know, that was a terrible pun. I'm moving quickly on. All right. I don't know. I am on the fence.
Yeah.
One of the really interesting observations that we've seen, there's some great reporting on pinknews.co.uk for this, is the impact that this will have on the economy of people whose job it is to provide some of that boyfriend experience.
So you think it's going to damage the sex work industry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because it's a lot cheaper to talk to a robot than to pay a nice man by the hour to come and hang out with you, go watch a movie, you know, maybe overnight stays. Who knows? It's a lot cheaper to go and have a dirty conversation with ChatGPT.
I feel like this scratches the itch but doesn't fix the problem. It's sort of like if you're really hungry and
it's like a placebo.
You have a bag of chips for dinner instead of something with like fresh green vegetables and, you know, a bowl of brown rice that has that nice fiber in there that white rice doesn't have. Like, it's not filling. It's like, it just eases the discomfort. And I think part of your brain is always going to know that it's less real.
So you think an AI boyfriend will just be empty calories?
Yeah.
Like those rice cracker bit cakes.
If you're socially shy, if you've been off the market for a while, if you have, avoidant personality disorder or something, I think this is a good way of sort of stepping-stoning your way back into healthy social interactions with other people. I think this is an okay training module.
I'm not convinced that that is actually the case. I believe it might be a good outlet for people who are very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the challenges that's been raised here is you are talking essentially to a brick wall.
Yeah.
And a brick wall that doesn't have their own feelings.
Yes.
Ambitions.
Yes.
Goals.
Yes.
And when you talk to a brick wall and then have a conversation with a real person,
yes.
That real person is going to have their own ambitions,
yes.
their own goals, their own intentions
yes.
for what to do that night.
And they're going to push back.
Yeah.
And they're going to disagree, and they're going to force you to grow, or they're going to force you to justify yourself.
So how can you have, like, what would the benefit necessarily be in having a relationship with a robot that always agrees with you and never says no?
They're going to have to develop a sassy bot.
They're going to have to develop a sassy bot that says no. Yeah, exactly. Because then you go into the real world, and
yeah.
real people aren't going to just agree with every single thing you say.
It's a new technology, and people are trying to find uses for the new technology. It's kind of like when handheld electrics became a thing in sort of the 50s and 60s, where like battery-powered stuff came around. And if you look at old ads, there was battery-powered all kinds of weird things. Like, I mean, they made a joke about on The Simpsons of the automatic hammer, if you remember that one. And it was just because the hammerhead was on a hinge that whenever you hit the nail, it actually hurt Homer's hand.
Hmm.
Because it was like twisting the handle up. It was just a bad idea. And it's that kind of thing. It's like, okay, well now we can make little tiny machines and put it in everything. Do we really need a mechanized spoon to spin your spaghetti for you?
I'm pretty sure I've seen that on Timu.
Yeah. And it's stupid, and they fall apart, and they're fun at first. You use them once, and after that, you're like, yeah, but I could just use a fork.
But at the same time, I have had conversations with real people
mm-hmm.
on Grindr, and the conversation is...
You'd be better off with the AI.
Yeah. I'd get more of a sentence out of an AI than I'd get out of some of these men.
Yeah.
I'm wondering then, obviously, talking to a robot, like talking to a brick wall, is not going to help you. You're building relationships with a fantasy that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It's not healthy long term.
No.
But if you need to talk something through, if you need to have an interaction, you know, in that moment, something that talks back in full sentences is maybe a little flirty. That's exciting. Mm. I think that's great. And I wonder if it's like one of those rising tides raises all ships, you know, would this AI force real men to have to up their game? You know, do you imagine how sad it would be if a robot is more interesting than the real human? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that would be a sad day for our society.
I mean, again, I kind of view this... that one of the potential benefits could be it could be used as a training module. Now, of course, I don't think this is the intent, but like if you're, there are so many people who just sit there and they react and respond. They're so afraid and so anxious and so shy that you say something and they react to that. But then if you don't say something, then
there's no initiation.
The room just falls silent, and you can't do that with an AI. The AI is going to be the one sitting there waiting for a prompt. You have to start. So in that sense of kicking people in the tootie butt, that they have to open their mouth and say a thing, I think that could be a potential benefit. But I think overall as a project, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this.
I think it could. It's a brave new world. And are we going to be looking at having AI boyfriends in the future? Yeah. I mean, honestly, it would be less chance of...
Do you want to date data?
No, I was thinking of the robot in AI.
Oh, okay.
The movie, I think it's 2001. There is a sex robot in there. But my partner
Jake... Data is a sex robot. He had sex with Tasha Yar in that one episode. Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
My partner Jake reminded me that this whole idea is itself a Black Mirror episode. So if you're curious about what that might look like, go and check out the Black Mirror episode.
I would date Data, but just because he has a really cute cat.
He does have a great cat.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to be jumping forward a couple of decades now. This is Tegan and Sarah, obviously a nice Canadian connection for our show, with Closer. And after that, we're going to be jumping to Mika. Doesn't get much gayer, poppier than Mika. I think Mika really...
maybe the Scissor Sisters.
Well, yes. I don't know. Like, Mika's pop is very... high sugar diet. You know what I mean? Like it's
gay in both senses of the word. It's also joyous.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And Lollipop is pretty darn iconic of that.
Yes.
So we're going to be playing with Tegan and Sarah's Closer, classic Canadian pop track that was very popular, followed by Mika's Lollipop, and we will be back just after.
All I want to get is a little bit closer.
Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian. You forgot our name, didn't you?
I forgot my own name for a whole second there. That's because I've been reading about... I nearly said, welcome back to Mr. Gay World.
Mr. Gay World.
Now, do you remember that the South African winner of Mr. Gay World... I feel like I am pretty gay, but I'm not Mr. Gay World level of gay.
Okay.
He walked away. He quit. In protest, ooh, barely 2 months after taking the title.
Okay.
Do you recall this? I'm pretty sure I brought it up as a casual side story.
To trust that I do remember it, which
I apologize if I'm not getting this name pronounced correctly. It's Lew Bredenbach.
Okay.
South African winner of it, essentially said that the Mr. Gay pageant...
Yes.
...handed him over a locked-up-in-steel contract... Mm-hmm. That required them to be the agent of all of the things. Now, this guy, Mr. Gay World, mm-hmm. Understandably already has a bit of a career. You don't just walk in to being Mr. Gay World. You come with a bit of a history. And for example, he already had an agent mm-hmm. for TV appearances.
Oh.
But the new pageant contract, he alleges, requires that all appearances, regardless of what format or style... has to go through Mr. Gay World.
Okay.
Now, it reminded me, and I think I mentioned this at the time, about some of the blowback to the RuPaul's Drag Race contracts.
Okay.
Where pretty much any catchphrase, slogan, or quirky thing they come up with is then owned by RuPaul.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And any appearance they do for about a year and a half afterwards, they have to make a cut go... back to the race.
But. Well, I mean, there's also almost a century's worth of beauty pageants, and there are plenty of famous stories of famous winners of beauty pageants who look at their contract, and it's so bad that what they decide to do during the year of their crowning or whatever is to just sit on a couch and wait it out, that they would rather just neglect their status as Miss Illinois or Miss America or Miss World. They would rather just sit it out and miss out on all the benefits because the contract is just so hot garbage that they're like, never mind. So that used to be a thing that, you know, somebody would win a pageant and then you would just never see them again. And it's because they saw the contract and they're like, this is terrible. Well, and I think usually for this kind of thing, you should go into it knowing what the results are going to be. Like, you have to abandon your agent. That should be something you know about before going in. What if your agent is your sister?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And a pretty important person to you that you want in your life.
Or maybe you've negotiated a very good rate with your agent.
Maybe you have an ironclad contract with your agent that prevents you from dropping them. So you have two contracts with agents saying you can only go with them and you can't abandon them.
Well, so, Mr. Gay World ditched them.
Okay.
Was like, nope, this is outrageous, took them to court. Now, Mr. Gay World, the competition, has alleged this is preposterous. It's not remotely accurate. It's all being blown out of proportion. It's not true. A judge has now dismissed the case.
Oh.
On technical grounds. Just in the way that it was filed.
Okay.
However, they awarded all of the costs against Mr. Game World.
Mm.
So the competition is going to have to pay for the lawyer fees and so on and so forth. It seems like both sides are honestly grateful to put it behind them.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone really wants to be embroiled in a legal battle, except for lawyers, of course. They love being embroiled in legal battles,
mm-hmm.
You know, when they're being paid. But, yeah, that's essentially it. We'll keep an eye on it. Will this change the contracts for Mr. Gay World moving forward? I'm not convinced.
Even if they don't, even if the contract remains exactly the same, the least they could do is when you apply to the competition, there should be some kind of a not non-disclosure agreement, but, you know, like, notice of whatever, where you have to read the thing and click on it. To basically say, I mean, I'm talking about this as if it's a website, but, you know, just basically you have to know what you're getting into before you get into it. If you win, the following restrictions will apply. And then people can walk away before they go through the process of entering. It's an easy fix.
Now, I want to pivot a little bit to O.J. Simpson.
Okay.
Now, he recently passed away.
Yes, I know he recently passed away. Yeah. I'm just confused. This is, you've clearly read something I have not read.
Yes. And you're like, O.J. Simpson, how is that that coming up? Now, the issue here is not so much with O.J. Simpson, but with how the UK's tabloid, The Daily Mail, appears to be implying that O.J. Simpson's dead father was somehow responsible for his murderous outrage. So the headline that the Daily Mail has run with is Making a Monster, semicolon, a drag queen father who died of AIDS, dot, 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 a daughter who drowned at age 2, dot, 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 and years of brutal violence against women.
Oh my God.
Clearly implying that the drag queen father who died of AIDS was obviously a motivating factor for O.J. Simpson murdering somebody.
Well, I mean, okay, first of all, that is a very Jerry Springer tabloid.
It does thing. Get, it's yeah. like, it's not more, it, that's very tabloid.
Yeah.
Daily Mail has outdone itself.
Yeah.
Making a monster, a drag queen father who died of AIDS.
And here's the thing, really what this comes back to is that classic, you know, concept that hurt people. And you can come up with every excuse in the world. Like, we know that Jeffrey Dahmer went through some pretty harsh things during his childhood. We know that a lot of famous bad people went through some pretty harsh things in their younger years. It doesn't mean you get to get away with it. Like, you can explain without excusing. Like, okay, fine. Maybe O.J. Simpson had a rocky relationship with his father during a period where I don't even know if it's true that his father was a drag queen or died of HIV.
Well, it is. His father did die of a HIV-related illness.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is true. And is there probably footage of him in drag? Probably also true. However, but what O.J. had said in an interview in 1977... I think he was speaking to the New York Times or Parents Magazine, one or the other, and said that he resented the absence of his father.
Okay.
And, quote, when I became a teenager and was trying to figure out who I was, I really needed a man around for guidance. Now, does the fact that in the 70s or earlier, a gay man couldn't really be openly gay, especially with a son,
mm-hmm.
and therefore lived a bit more secretly? Is that why O.J. Simpson allegedly committed the crimes that he then committed? I think the Daily Mail is taking some certain liberties here with how they've portrayed it.
I mean, that's a perfectly good justification for him having a rocky relationship with his father. Feeling
that daddy issues, for sure.
Feeling he was lied to or something. But that, and I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there's also plenty of people who've done pretty horrible things who have healthy relationships with their parents. It's not causal. I think the link is pretty tenuous, and I think the Daily Mail has a... I was about to say they've outdone themselves, but this is kind of just on brand. This is just them doing business as usual, and that's not a good thing.
Exactly. The Daily Mail needs to do better. The implication of just by the virtue of his father having done drag and succumbed to HIV and eventually then AIDS.
Well, also they waited to publish this until after he died. They just sat on it until O.J. Simpson couldn't say, no, that's weird, what are you doing? Like, he, dead people can't defend themselves.
Exactly.
Waiting until now to publish this is just cheap.
It's just salacious and it's not great. Yeah. All right. We have run out of time.
Oh, have we?
And we're going to be playing out with a couple of songs. And this one is Dizzy, which I believe is the submission from the UK to Eurovision. Also, as Jojo Siwa, never seen Eurovision.
Okay.
Like, it doesn't get much more gay pop than Eurovision.
Right.
The finale obviously happening in May. Very excited about that. So this is Olly Alexander's Dizzy. And now, I'm a fan of Mad Sai, and this is his track Boys Beware, from, like, I think 5 months ago. It's, like, a very recent track. We've chosen some pretty recent songs, like, from the last year or so, to demonstrate that it's not like Jojo Siwa is reintroducing a genre.
Yeah.
Or a genre that's become dormant. You know, it's an active genre.
Yes.
Where people are releasing music today.
Yeah.
And these are kinds of the flavors that come from it. You know, can Jojo Siwa help to build on and expand the genre? Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But it seems tone deaf, ironically, for a musician to not be aware of the music scene that she is ostensibly the CEO of.
And that's so bizarre. I mean, you don't declare yourself a thing. Michael Jackson didn't declare himself the king of pop. Other people did.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, okay, I suppose so. You know, what's her name? Queen of Disco. Donna Summer didn't declare herself the queen of disco. Other people did. Like, it's egotistical to declare yourself, you know, the leader of the pack on something.
Yeah.
For something like this. You know, I don't know. There's a lot about this that's just weird.
It was bizarre. All right. I have been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
There's a place where we break the line. Make it a circle. Eternal flowers, you know the way, so take me there. Won't you make me dizzy from your kisses? Will you take my hand and spin me round and round until the moon?
Say yes to heaven. You chew my heart like bubblegum. Teach me.